Did you hear anything? Have you heard it? What was it? Is anybody there? Did you hear anything? Have you heard it? What was it? Is anybody there? Did you hear that? What was it? Is anybody there?
Bill, I was doing some research for this episode of sorts, and I located this article when I was surfing around like I do on the interwebs, and the title of it was Social Cognition and the Allure of the Second Person in Defense of Empathy and Simulation.
That's going to get a lot of local interest. I can tell that's going to get, you know, because I'm thinking, oh, I've got to dive into that. You know,
well,
let me wipe this glaze off my eyes.
I naively clicked on it. I thought, so I will use that as part of my research. And I started and I went, no, that one's not going nowhere.
Not going to work.
It was so above me, I couldn't even make a joke about it start this episode.
There's an art in editing your title to make it, something you want to read or delve into. I think that person missed that chapter.
Well, that I just wasn't the audience for that particular article. But I was intrigued by it because it said second person.
Second person.
Because, dear listener, we're going to attempt to delve into something fairly technical today and talking about the use of the second person in poetry.
It's like someone standing behind you, the unseen person, the unknown diner at every table, the second person.
Yeah, it could be a mystery. Because actually when I think second person, I also think third man. Remember that Orson Welles movie?
Mm-hmm.
The Third Man.
Mm-hmm.
The Second Person.
Mm-hmm.
I bet there's a book out there named The Second Person.
I wonder if this interests you because of the mystery of second person, or you like mysteries in general.
I do.
You know?
I do. But I, as a former quit teacher of English, and I say quit teacher because I didn't retire. I was a quit teacher. Mm-hmm. I remember getting on to students all the time for using second person in essays, which you're generally not supposed to do because it sounds intrusive, or you're telling somebody something and they're like, no, that's not me. Why are you using you? Why are you using second person? So I was always circling it and writing above it, 2P.
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 TMI.
2P.
Was it in red ink or black ink?
No, I didn't use red ink.
Yeah, that's like hitting you across the face with red ink.
Well,
I got a lot of red ink in my days.
Yeah, it just gets ignored anyway. So
I like
just use whatever pen you have handy.
Why? Question mark. Why? I was like, why? I don't. You know, why not?
2P. 2P.
2P.
Yeah. So they would get thinking, what does that mean? 2P. Second person. Stop using it.
Mm-hmm.
But in poetry, it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm. It is a different thing.
Yeah. So we're going to attempt to talk about that here in a little bit.
Okay. All right.
For joining us on our attempt today.
Yeah, right, and welcome. Welcome to, what number are we on? What are
we are on 119, Wacky Poem Live, episode 119.
Hey, 19. 119.
Hey, 19! With 100.
With 100. Prefaced by 100.
I think
119.
I can do that much math as a quit teacher. As a quit English teacher, I can still do.
Yeah.
A tad bit of math.
Oh, certainly. I can add with my fingers. I can count back change. I'm of that age. You know.
Oh, I can do that too at the rummage store when I work, and I count change back to people.
I bet it confuses
they
the
often
heck
comment,
out of them.
Well, the younger people are confused. The older people are like, oh, thank you for doing that.
Yeah. That way you get back the accurate change.
Yeah, the younger people are just mad that I won't take a card.
Do you take Apple Pay here at the rummage?
Seriously? Yeah. I have to use real money? Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even coins.
Coins. 3 makes a quarter, 75 makes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 10 is 20. Thank you. Second person. Reminds me of Second City.
Mm-hmm.
Second City comedy troupe.
Before we go, the idea of the second thing, the second person, it's intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you remember the second person you held hands with? Not family.
Vaguely.
The second person you dated? The second person you made whoopee with?
Probably.
I can remember most of those, I think. I don't need to reveal them here.
Can we have names and numbers, you know?
Second person. Anyway, before we get started on that, we need to talk about what we mentioned in our last episode that was about cards.
cards.
Greeting cards.
And we asked our listeners to send in cards and show interest in our podcast. Yes. And I always like to say, you know, if you can send a little bit of currency or something to pay us, it would be so nice. Because, you know, and we received our first paycheck in the mail from our
mailbox was overflowing.
It was overflowing with that one envelope.
With one card.
And one card. We each made some money, which I've not got my
portion of that yet.
We're so pathetic, aren't we? But Verla sent us some currency in the form of, I'm sorry, some coin. Coinage. And I've not
received. Loose change.
Loose change. And I have not seen loose change taped to a card in many years. So it was, I thought it was very sweet. And I haven't responded to her personally via Facebook or anything yet. But
hi, Verla.
Hi, Verla. I need to thank you for the...
Oh, I sent her a message. I thanked her for both of us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Verla. She also altered the card like we talked about last time.
Yes.
And turned it to... I can't remember what it was, but she turned it into...
She made it
something different for the occasion.
Right.
Yes.
She made it appropriate.
Yeah. So thank you, Verla. And the rest of you deadbeats out there, you can still send us a card because, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Post Office Box 1243.
Mm-hmm. Locust One of Grove? These days we're okay. going to get
74352
really unexpected parcel or letter or something.
A parcel? Oh, that sounds like the title of a poem. An unexpected parcel.
From a second person. The second person sent this anonymously. Was it ticking? We don't know. We had it scanned.
So the second person. Of course, what we're talking about is you. Mm-hmm. The use of you in poetry and songs. And before we started recording, we were talking about songs and how so many popular songs use the second person. And that's usually, you know, they're just talking to another person that they know. It's usually a love song and they're talking to the person they love.
I think a good songwriter does that to draw you in and to make it more relatable and therefore more makes the song popular, and everyone, that's what a song is about. Yeah. You want it to be spread around and everyone to identify.
Yeah, she loves you, yeah. But you know what? It could also be to scare you.
Yeah.
Every breath you take.
Well, right.
Talk
about misinterpretation. You know, people, you know, speaking of that song, people were listening to that and they're thinking, oh, how sweet, every breath you take, until you realize it's a damn stalker with a knife in his hand, you know.
I'll be watching.
You know, standing outside your window. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think people that broke up back in the day, what was that, from the 80s? When they broke up?
That was from the 80s.
Then they would send that song to their to their ex.
Speaking of that,
just to freak them out.
You or I are of the age, I made my paramours mixtapes of songs that were...
I.e. lover. That's what paramour means, lover. People. You don't know.
Or love interest.
What am I saying? We have intelligent listeners. They know what a paramour is. Sorry, listeners.
It's all right. But I would make tapes of songs that I thought were memorable and lovable to send to them. You know, at the beginning of a relationship, and then sometimes I sent the opposite. You know, that we're done. Done.
Your cheating heart.
You're so vain. You probably think this
tell
song is,
on yeah. you. Mm-hmm.
You'll cry and cry the whole night through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, that's a crying, tear in your beer song. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and your cheating heart, that's kind of to a specific person. I mean, I don't know. Hank Williams might have had some, if he wrote it. I don't know if he wrote that song. He might have had someone specific in mind. Now, Carly Simon, they said, really did have someone specific in mind
We never fully knew. We have an idea, don't we?
You know? Some said it was Mick Jagger. Some said Warren Beatty. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Mick Jagger sang background vocals in that song.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Right. A little tidbit there.
But see, that's two examples right there of the use of second person differently. One of them is referring to a specific person that other people know, and the other is just referring to, you know, a specific person, but not a noted one, not one that people would be familiar with.
Yeah. And we were talking about Go Your Own Way. You know, tell me why, everything turned around, backing up, shacking up's all you wanted to do. You know, now you change your mind. Greener pastures.
Yes. But you're talking about that one. And we're also, when Stevie Nicks is singing in Rihanna, and that one is kind of a plural you. Because I don't think that one she's singing to
a specific
person. Right. When she says, wouldn't you love to love her? Who will be her lover all your life you've never seen? Mm-hmm. I think that's the plural you. Mm-hmm. It's just anybody who's listening to the song.
And they're quite beautiful. The Eagles wrote some beautiful you songs. Best of My Love. Mm-hmm. Every night I'm lying in bed, holding you close in my dreams, thinking about all the things that we said and mm-hmm. coming apart at the seams. Mm-hmm. Definitely someone in mind. But we can all identify with someone that we've let go or they've left and we miss them. Mm-hmm. So it's really relatable.
Yeah, it's really neat when it's a specific person you can tell the songwriter had in mind, but then we can universalize it.
Right, which we do.
Yeah.
We
do. Indeed. Now, I do have another article because the day I told you, let's do something about the second person, and you went, what? And I said, yeah.
As I do.
Yeah,
as I often do.
I don't know why. I woke up that day thinking about the second person, and it was so weird, and I told you that, and I came down to the museum, and my American Poetry Review paper, this is a paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a newspaper magazine.
It's a hard copy paper, yes.
Was there in my mailbox, and I opened it up, and one of the first articles I saw was, here's the title, Ambiguities of the Second Person in English Language Fiction and Poetry by Jason Schneiderman.
Sounds very ambiguous.
Well, there are some ambiguities in it, and it is a little above my head, too. I have been out of the academic world for a while, so I don't follow
you didn't,
things
you
quite.
You didn't quit academics, did you?
Yes, I
oh,
yes,
you did?
Yes,
oh,
I
no.
did. I quit that, too.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
But it was really interesting, too, and I like that sense of ambiguity because I think that's what second person does in a poem sometimes, mm-hmm. is it makes things ambiguous. But he says, Schneiderman says in this article, the ambiguity, it typically requires a certain level of shared knowledge between the writer and the reader, because without that shared foundation, it could be confusing. Mm-hmm. You know, who are you talking about with this you?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why you shouldn't really use it in an essay, piece of nonfiction, particularly an argument, because you don't know who your reader is, mm-hmm. and you shouldn't be telling them, this is the way you feel.
The way you think.
Feel. Yeah, this mm-hmm. is how you think.
Right.
This is how you feel. But then it also can just be confusing if you're talking to a you and about something that they don't know anything about. The danger, this is what Schneiderman said, the danger of ambiguity is that it can make the reader feel excluded by the text, left out of the insider knowledge needed to make sense of the text.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the songs, because we keep talking about songs, but so many of them are poetic, and this one definitely is that I thought about was an Indigo Girls song, and it's titled Virginia Woolf, mm-hmm. and it is about Virginia Woolf. But if you didn't know anything about Virginia Woolf, it's the ambiguity of the poem, I guess, probably might mm-hmm. make you feel a little bit left out, because, of course, she was a very famous, intelligent, wonderful writer. And one of her key things that she wrote about was how important it was for women to have a room of their own in which to write, in which mm-hmm. to be alone. And that's a reference in the song.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really cool about the song, too, even though it's talking to her, it talks directly to Virginia Woolf. It said, with the first line, they published your diary. And she says to her, and that's how I got to know you, the key to the room of your own and a mind without end. And she goes on, and she's singing the song, and she says, you know, I'm all right. Life will come and life will go. I feel it's all right. And then she has another stanza where she's talking to Virginia Woolf, and then the chorus comes in, and now it's, so you know you're all right. Life will come and life will go, but still you'll feel it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
So she switches from the I to the you.
Mm-hmm.
So now it feels like she's talking to her audience.
Mm-hmm. She transfers
to
the...
Like it starts out, this is very personal. I was changed personally by reading Virginia Woolf's works.
Mm-hmm.
But this, you can be changed too, mm-hmm. if you'll just listen to what I'm saying about her message.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're all right. Life will come and life will go. And she's also saying, well, Virginia Woolf killed herself mm-hmm. in the end. And she's mentioning that. Because some of the best lines in this song, sorry I'm going on about it, but it's a wonderful song. You know mm-hmm. what I'm talking about?
I love
about?
The Indigo Girls. I'm not familiar with that particular song offhand,
yeah.
but I love the Indigo Girls.
So Virginia Woolf didn't know if she would live on, you know. The battle surrounded the white flag of your youth. If you need to know that you weathered the storm of cruel mortality, 100 years later, I'm sitting here living proof.
Mm-hmm.
So 100 years later, she's singing the song about her and sharing it with other people and telling them it's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. And yep. a lot of that, I think, is because of that. The power of the song is that switch to the second mm-hmm. person. But you know what she does in the course of the third?
What's that?
She changes it to we.
To we.
So it goes from you to we.
Interesting.
Yeah.
More, you know, more inclusive as it goes on.
Yes.
I've seen the Indigo Girls twice in concert. I really love them. Yeah.
They have, their songs are just so wonderfully.
Oh, man. Yes.
Poetic.
Yes. Yep. Yes. The research that I did says second person poetry, the speaker or the object of the poem typically is you, quote mm-hmm. unquote, mm-hmm. you. And a good lecturer, when they start a lecture, will say something like, Have you had the experience? Who's had their heart broken? Who has done this? Who's done that? Have you? And if you raise your hand, automatically you're engaged, and that's a good speaker will engage you and start that process.
Using you as an icebreaker.
Get your attention.
And that's the difference too. You really shouldn't use second person in an essay and in a lot of most nonfiction, but in a speech, mm-hmm.
Draw you in.
Yes.
Relate. Immersive interaction gives a second person's perspective, creates more immediate effect for readers. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm doing a pop quiz here. Designed to draw you in to the experience being conveyed in the poem. Narrative immersion. And I've wrote some examples of things I like in
right. Because that second person really stands out and draws people in a poetry reading if you use it in a poem.
Yeah.
As you're speaking, not even more so than on the page reading it.
What does this do for you, Sean?
Okay.
You feel the sharp sting of sleet on your face. I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm stepping, I've had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You catch the scent of honeysuckle through the open window. Think of Summer Breeze by Seals and Crofts. You catch a glimpse of the last glow of a sunset as you step outside.
Are these lines from a poem?
These are things I wrote out of my mind. I just wrote these down.
They're lines from Bill's from my poetic mind.
Which, by the way, is one of my Pinterest topics. Lines from my mind is one of them. You hear the loud teacher, teacher, teacher of a wren long before sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that I thought, I can ask you, and it will draw a memory or a reaction.
Mm-hmm. And if you use those lines exactly as you said them there in a poem, let me see your paper.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about the scratch.
That's different.
It's in the handwriting.
If the lines just said the sharp sting of sleet on the face, the scent of honeysuckle through the open window, a glimpse of the last glow of a sunset stepping out. Mm-hmm. See, I've taken the person totally out of there.
Yeah, they're behind the glass.
Right. It's just arrangement of images. But then you add it in, you feel the sharp sting of sleet on your face.
I like the sharp sting sleet.
Yes.
I kind of like that.
Got some good alliteration going on there, dude.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So it's you can write a poem of imagery, and, I'm pretty... You're good at it because you're good at metaphors too, and I like filling poems with sensory images. But then there's the thing that you can think about too is what point of view are you telling this poem in? And like you said, when I was reading the altered lines, and mm-hmm. you said it's like you're standing outside the window, mm-hmm. observing, looking in. So if you want to bring your reader in closer, then you got to think about your point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think the second person does that. It also makes things like this essay I was reading kind of ambiguous sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, who is the you?
I've noticed that I write so seldomly in second person. It's not something that I write often or use often. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering now why.
I do it a lot.
You do it a lot?
In poetry. One of the poems I posted on my daily poem list the other day. It's called Driving at Night. On the two-lane road, get close behind another car to keep track of the curves. Brake when it breaks, speed up when it does. Hope the driver can see the yellow lines better than you. Nothing exists beyond the pavement. The darkness absolute, no moon, no houses with lights out front. The world becoming a shoebox while you wait for the lid to lift.
Really relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Totally get that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why do you think I wrote it in second person, though? I don't have an answer for that. So I don't think I'm trying to get a specific answer.
I think
answer.
That might have been a subconscious thing that you have done. But what I mean is those of us of a certain age have all done that, followed someone closely because we are – it's like you're hoping for the best. We're in this together. We're not alone. I'm following you. And
it's a scary, dangerous thing.
It is.
So maybe that's why I didn't want to use first person. Mm-hmm. Put it in the you gives itself a little, gives a little distance from me. Right. Also, it reads more like directions.
Yeah.
When you say you, this is what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. What you must do to stay safe.
That is what I have to do.
What you
got to
do to stay safe.
In the dark.
If it's wet and slick, I'm following you. Don't send me off this road.
I hope you know what you're doing.
You know what you're doing.
Person in front of me.
I'm going to read a quick poem and see if you think it's second person.
Okay.
I think it might be.
Okay.
Okay. I will tell you the author after I finish. And here we go. Flying inside your own body, your lungs fill and spread themselves, wings of pink blood, and your bones empty themselves and become hollow. When you breathe in, you'll lift like a balloon, and your heart is too light and too huge, beating with pure joy, with pure helium. The sun's white winds blow through you. There's nothing above you. You see the earth now as an oval jewel, radiant and sea blue with love. It's only in dreams you can do this, walking. Your heart is a shaken fist, a fine dust clogs the air you breathe in. The sun's hot copper weight pressing straight down on the think pink rind of your skull. It's always the moment before the gunshot. You try to rise, but you cannot. And maybe this is, I assume this is a well-known poet.
Okay, give me a hint.
Her initials are M.A.
M.A.?
Margaret Atwood. This is
Margaret Atwood. Oh, it's a Margaret Atwood.
And
We've got a Margaret Atwood poem in the exhibit right now in the museum.
I thought that, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and there's a quote from her above the doorway. The main room.
Well, then, you know what? She's well known here.
the quote is a word after a word after a word after a word is power.
Is power.
Yeah.
Words are power.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm real pleased, listeners, I'm very pleased at myself because I have, and you probably know this as a child, a severe speech impediment, stuttering impediment, shadowing impediment. So reading is difficult for me. As far as communicating properly.
They wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know. But
no, because you read it so well.
Did I? Thank you. But it's one of those things that's like, man, I feel it surfacing. It's like, I'm getting ready to stutter. Let's just not do that.
Yeah. I mean, look at the poem. There's the second person in almost every line. Mm-hmm. The use of it. Your lungs fill, wings of pink blood, your bones empty themselves. So, and what use of the second person is this? Who is the you in this poem?
It's me.
It's her.
It's her?
Oh. Don't you think? Yeah. I think she's talking about herself.
She's this has happened to her.
Yeah.
But haven't we all had...
But it could be other people, too.
Many of us had dreams where we fly when we sleep? I have. I'm a flying instructor when I sleep. I'm trying to teach others how to fly.
You're a flying instructor.
I'm a flying instructor. It's like if you just jump properly, you will levitate on your own. And I'm trying to tell... And you can turn... But my favorite line is the think pink rind of your skull.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because you think with your brain and your mind, the think pink. And I looked up several copies of this because I thought she means to say thick. But no.
No.
It's think pink.
Yeah.
The think pink rind of your skull.
Cool.
So
that's a wonderful poem.
Yeah. Flying inside your own body.
And it's a great use of the second person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah.
I don't think she's with us anymore, probably.
Superior example. I noticed in the poems that I was writing for our exhibit book on our latest exhibit, Her Kind, The Witch in History, Popular Culture, and Poetry, that I didn't use the second person on some of those, too. Most of them were in third person, where I just referring to she.
Mm-hmm.
But I occasionally use the second person, and it was, sometimes I knew why, and sometimes I really didn't.
Yeah.
There's a short little poem I wrote about Angelique from Dark Shadows.
Oh, yes.
Because of the memory of coming home from school and running from the bus into the living room. and turning it on because it came on right after we got home from school.
I see, yeah.
Dark Shadows. And hiding behind the couch to watch it because it terrified me. looking at it as an adult, the original, I'm like, why was I so afraid of that?
Your little head peeking out, little eyes peeking out to watch it from behind the couch. That's a cute image.
But in this one I wrote, it's called Recognition. Little remains of the memories of those days hiding behind the couch, just home from school, terrified of what I was seeing. Her eyes like cold crystals that would never warm, a voice like a snake sliding along the floorboard just out of sight, but rustling with intent. Angelique, you wove a nightmare in the afternoon. You were the first powerful woman I recognized in the lonely world of men all around us.
Nice. Yeah.
And see, there I'm using the second person, and it's unequivocal. There's no ambiguity about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a direct address.
I'm trying to remember the Dark Shadows theme song. I seem to remember waves crashing. Okay. That did nothing for me. It terrified me. But the thing is,
that's what it was.
I'm hearing waves on rocks, crashing waves. I don't know if that's part of the intro or not.
Yeah, and the song, and the music was.
I wanted to ask you something, Sean. I read the book, and I love the book, In Cold Blood by Truman Capote.
Yes.
Was it written in second person? Because the way he describes detail is amazing to me. And the way he led us into the mind of not only the Clutter family who were murdered, but the two murderers.
I doubt it's second person.
Probably not second, but I felt like I was right there with them
mm-hmm.
the entire time.
Mm-hmm. He was a master of detail.
Yeah.
And of setting up a scene.
You know, there's a manuscript.
In his early days.
There's a manuscript.
He fell apart like a lot of writers.
Oh, my gosh. Did he ever? He crashed and burned big time. There's a manuscript that's never been found. Answered Prayers that he said he wrote. It's never been found.
Oh.
Never been found.
Cool.
Wouldn't that be something to find that someday?
Yeah.
Answered Prayers.
Well, I'm wondering if I should read this other poem. I really like it.
Well, read it. Yes. Read it.
I mean, if anybody out there tuning in for the first time.
There's got to be. Got to be. You know, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. We are sometimes quite wacky and sometimes less wacky. And I don't know, this topic was whatever, you know.
This was your baby, and I think we did it some decent justice, you know.
Well, I want to do this.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and do it.
Yes.
All right, so this from this article from American Poetry Review by Jason Snyderman, he quotes a poem, and I want to read it and say a little bit about how it ends, because it does not use the second person until the very end, but everything that leads up to it, it's just, it makes it a very powerful ending.
Right.
Okay. So it's a poem called Diaspora, and it's written really small, so I hope I can see it. And it's by Erica Meitner. I am riding the F train to Brooklyn with my son, who is Appalachian as much as anything, who is 6 and does not notice the Hasidic women reading Tehillim on their way home, praying psalms from worn, leather-bound siddurim, moving their lips past Broadway, Second Avenue, Delancey, and he would not know to identify them by their below-the-knee skirts, the filled-in parts of their shadows, where scalp should be visible, or the Brighton Beach men in gray fedoras with threatening hand tattoos, speaking Russian, the occasional wondrous mosaic murals, or regular green and white tiles spelling station names, Bergen Street, Carroll Street, Smith, 9th Street. My son discovering he can see his own reflection in the windows of the cars when they plunge into dark tunnels while the women's lips keep moving. And I want to tell him I know they're kind, though I know to say this is reductive or offensive, even if I might say it too about the bleach blonde with the septum ring or the old Russian mobsters. So when he says, it's hard to believe that you got off here every day, I agree. and think of all the times I climbed the station stairs or felt the give of metal turnstiles on my hips, the jangle of apartment keys or click of my own heels on pavement after night out too late, the car service guys playing dominoes on overturned crates outside the bodega who didn't look up, and the way the trains still vibrate beneath the surface with exactly the same frequency they always did, blowing hot air through the grates, rattling me to the bone with foreboding joy. And I want to tell him, I know this exact moment, the one where you finally learn the contours of your own face, its beauty as it hurtles through darkness.
Nice. You finally learn.
Yes.
You know, you finally.
And who is that you at the end? Mm-hmm. It's her talking. It's her son. Mm-hmm. It's anybody reading this poem.
That can identify with that same situation, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the whole poem's about, as Schneiderman says, identity and recognition. And it's about multiple kinds of belonging, especially the kind that comes from being in proximity with difference.
Yeah.
That was a quote from
But I like the metaphor of a face hurtling through space.
Yeah.
As our faces hurtle through space in life, we go from youth and what we presume is beauty to getting older to it's like being sandblasted by time. You get lines and
that's
wrinkles.
That's a cool image, sandblasted by time.
Sandblasted by time. You get lines and wrinkles and glaucoma, and the hair goes somewhere to the ears, in my case. But anyway, that's just a very interesting thing.
And we all start looking alike at the end there,
We look kind of alike, you know.
Which, again, is what this poem is about, that identification with the other. People who are different, but in the end, when you finally learn the contours of your own face, its beauty as it hurtles through darkness.
Are they saying when you're finally comfortable with who you are?
I think so.
And, you know, and accept who you are comfortable, because that is just it. There's no other choice.
Yeah. And Schneiderman says, at the very end, the you slips into three distinctly ambiguous positions. The you is the speaker's experience. This is a moment of discovering her own beauty in this location, in this manner. The you is also the son who's being spoken to and being assumed to share the experience, which is to say this is happening or is about to happen to the son in the poem. And then there's the general person, the universalizing gesture that assumes that all riders of the F train will discover their beauty in the reflected window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
I love it.
That's so
love
far
it.
Removed from where we're sitting right here on Main Street in Little Locust Grove, Oklahoma, Mace County, America.
But yet in this little tiny dot on the map in this rural area, we're talking about it.
Yeah. We are talking about you.
Yeah.
You, the listener. You, the world.
We're reaching you. We're reaching you right now.
I hope so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thank you, listeners. Thank you. Thank you, Bill, for doing this topic with me.
I feel like I've learned something. I hope I've contributed some. You know,
we like to deliver information at the same time.
I want to keep my gray matter firing as long as I can.
That's good. And entertainment can do that.
That's
to
right.
A certain level, keep them fired. But a little information now and then can
never hurts.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you for that Margaret Atwood poem that I was not familiar with.
Well, certainly.
So
yes.
That's beautiful. And yeah. So what? Are we done? You got anything else?
WordFest is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought we'd mention that real quickly.
Yes.
Because it is a big deal.
Folks, this is going to be cool. All right. April 13th. It's our, I don't remember which annual, I don't know how many years we've been doing this, quite a few years. Mm-hmm. We have an annual festival. It started out being called Romp Fest, and then we moved it into town and called it Wonder City Word Fest. And we give out the awards for the Oklahoma Poem Contest. We're going to have a live band with dancing outside. I was just messaging today one of the He's the vice president of the American Kite Flyers Association. Mm-hmm. He lives in Tulsa. They were here last year.
Yeah,
he's coming back.
Oh, big dragon
and
kites.
He may mm-hmm. bring others with him. And across the street from the museum is a big open field, and they're going to fly some enormous, wonderful, colorful kites. And we're also going to have a kite decorating contest.
Nice.
We're going to have Mark Henson has a nonprofit food truck, Neighbor's Fork. He's going to be here making free food for people. Mm-hmm. I just added Maria Breedlove, our local photographer.
Yes.
She has a pet photography studio here in town, and she's going to come down and set up and do pet photos. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have a pet poem contest.
Oh, how cool.
To go with it.
How cool. She does wonderful work, by the way. You can find her space on mm-hmm. Facebook. Right.
I think Paul, Master Paul, is mm-hmm. going to come back. We'll do a little martial arts
demos. You might see me do a high kick and a backflip.
A high kick and a haiku.
And a haiku.
We'll do the haiku
high
contest
kicks and
again.
Haiku. What a brilliant topic.
Yeah. So if you're anywhere in the area or you're willing to drive here to Locust Grove America, then please do so on that day. Plus, mm-hmm. Robert Reed.
Yeah, from Gallery America.
From Gallery America, OETA. He and his videographer are supposed to be here that day, too.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I love his program.
Yeah. Yep. It's wonderful. He's supposed to join us sometime again for another podcast episode.
Oh, it'll be wild.
He was so wonderful in that last one we did. That was so much fun.
I enjoyed it. Caught every curveball I threw. Sure did.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for
absolutely.
Listening. Spread the word.
Yeah.
We love you.
We
guys.
Love you. We do. Yeah.
We love you.
All tens and
second person.
All tens and tens of you.